Priority 1 message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
You are listening to the Trek Ranks Podcast, a member of the Tricorder Transmissions Podcast Network. This is episode 93, featuring the top five scenes on Earth. Welcome, Star Trek fans. I am Jim Morehouse. I am the host of the Trek Ranks Podcast, and tonight we've got another big episode for you. We are expanding our favorite Trek Ranks series to cover basically every corner of Sector 001 tonight. It's one of our biggest shows ever. We are tackling our eighth Scenes in Trek topic. We're going to count them off really quick. We've previously done Scenes in a Jeffries Tube, Shuttlecraft, Turbo Lift, Brig, On Location, In a Cave, Sick Bay, and now we are doing our top five scenes on Earth. And to take on this special topic, we have four guests on tonight's show. That is my cat in the background. You're probably going to hear her very frequently because it's 4 a.m. and I've locked her out. Okay, but to fit it all in, we're going to go a little faster than normal. We're a little bit of a speed round to get everybody in. But first, why do we have four guests on tonight for this topic? Well, they aren't just any four guests. They're all coming to us from four different countries, from all around this beautiful planet, and including myself, I guess that's five different countries we'll have represented on tonight's show. So we have the United States, Canada, England, Australia, and South Korea all connecting in from all across Sector 001 to take on our top five scenes on Earth. So let's do this. Let's get into our great panel. First up, representing England, it's Jen House. Jen, what city and what time is it in England?
Well, I'm probably the lucky one recording at the moment because it's currently lunchtime. sure. And I'm up in the northeast of England, really middle of nowhere, but nearest city somewhere between Newcastle and Leeds.
I love it. And it's like 12 noon your time, right?
Yes.
Beautiful. All right. And second, it's Dana Kennedy. She is making her third appearance, I think, on Trek.
So, I think this is my fourth.
Oh, fourth. There you go. See, I can't keep track. Too many. Where are you and what time is it?
I'm from Toronto, and it's just after 7 in the morning. I did, however, live in Milton Keynes, England for a few years, so
That would
have been nice to be right now.
That's right. So 7 a.m. where Dana is, third. Returning to the show all the way from the Korea Republic, a.k.a. South Korea, it's Daniel Martin. Daniel.
Yeah, it's just gone 8 p.m. for me. I'm not actually Korean, I should say. I've been here for about 10 years.
That's fair.
English born. But yeah, I'm very happy to represent the country of Korea for this topic. So yeah, happy to be here.
It's fantastic. I am actually 1/16th Korean, which is a funny little oddity. Oh. And fifth, making her Trek Ranks debut from the land down under. It's Lirian McGregor in Australia. Lirian, welcome to Trek Ranks.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me on. It's an honor to be here. Hailing from Sydney in Australia.
You are in Sydney. And what time is it? You're an hour later or earlier than Daniel?
Later. So it's 9 p.m. here.
9 p.m. Okay. I love it. This is Lirian has actually been on the show before in our studio audience. We had a live recording at STLV once, a couple of times. And she was there. That was awesome. All right. Well, I said it before. It is 4 a.m. in the Los Angeles sector for me. Well worth getting up early to make this show happen so we can connect everybody from all across the U.S. All right, Lirian, since you're our only first timer tonight, let's get your quick Trek origin story on just how you got into Trek and what's your favorite Trek and how much have you seen. Give us a quick snapshot of that.
Sure. Well, just to start with, I think I meant to say g'day earlier. Sorry.
Yes.
That's I'll fall short of expectations if I don't say g'day. So my brother introduced me to Trek, basically. And then it kind of became a family thing. So that was our like sit down TV show where we'd all watch together and then talk about the themes afterwards. It was proper family time. And we'd get it a lot on VHS down here. So I think a lot of the new stuff aired on or was available on VHS before it aired on the television. So some of my favorite memories with my brother are rushing down to the video store to get the latest episode of Deep Space Nine, seeing it on the shelf there. And I remember seeing You Are Cordially Invited on the shelf, you know, and I was like, oh my God, it's the wedding, and getting really super excited. And so that's my, you know, early experience of Trek, getting those VHSs. And it's kind of a very physical thing, I guess, because, you know, I kind of consumed Trek in a physical box that was brand new and looked so pretty and no one else had ever watched it because we always got there first. So, yeah. It
was awesome.
Yeah, really cool.
Is Deep Space Nine your favorite series?
Yeah, you know, I subscribe to that. But yeah, if it's just about where my happy place is, that's Deep Space Nine.
And of course, your brother is Jamie McGregor, who's been on the show a couple of times as well.
That's right. Yes. So while he introduced me to it, I did go back and watch the DVDs on my own to sort of like catch up on all the episodes that I missed. And I do remember doing one unique thing, which is trying not to commit anything to memory from the episodes, right? So I actually remember watching them thinking, don't remember anything that's happening, just enjoy it at the moment. And then that means you can come back and watch it again and you will have forgotten everything that happened. And that has worked surprisingly well for me over the years. There are some episodes that I've seen like 10 times and I couldn't tell you what the episode is, who the aliens are, what the planet was. Makes me a terrible trivia player, but it means I get to enjoy Trek over and over. So that's my story.
I actually understand that concept because I always know I'm going to be rewatching them so many. There are times when you disassociate a little bit so that it'll feel fresh. I understand that concept in general. All right. So this is going to be awesome. Let's get into our Trek Ranks recalibration to get into today's show.
What are you recalibrating?
Everything. It's a sweeping, a recalibration of all systems.
First up, as regular listeners will know by now, general order number one here at the Trek Ranks podcast that we love Trek and we love to rank Trek via some deep dive topics just to get the conversation started. And remember, it's not about the ranks. That's just an excuse for us to talk about Star Trek.
But what is that Vulcan motto? Infinite diversity
in infinite combinations.
And what is diversity? A celebration of differences.
And as T'Pol and Dr. Phlox just said, Trek Ranks is basically just a big old celebration of differences. There are no wrong answers here at Trek Ranks. It's not about being right or definitive in any way. It's just about sharing the things we love about Trek. And we love it all, from TOS to TNG, straight through to Enterprise, and the Kelvin timeline, and now Discovery, and Short Treks, and Star Trek Picard, and Lower Decks as well. It's all fair game here on the Trek Ranks podcast.
Black alert. Black alert.
And one final reminder that we use episodes as shorthand terms, but the 13 films are always in play as well. And there are a lot of scenes on Earth in the 13 Star Trek films, that is for sure.
You know, interface, net access, channel 90.
And you can find Trek Ranks on the net access interface links at trekranks.com. You can contact me directly on Twitter at Trek Ranks or at Enterprise Extra. And you can also call and leave us a message with your own picks at 609-512-LLAP. That's 609-512-5527. Okay, so to wrap it up, we'll do a run through of all of our guests here. Just to get an idea of how everybody can get a hold of you guys on the net access interface. So, Jen, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The best place to find me is on Twitter. I'm at Dr. Jen Throws.
And Dana?
I'm on Twitter as at Static Warp Bubble with no E at the end, and also on Tumblr at Static Warp Bubble with an E and dashes in between the words.
I realize that everybody's on Twitter because I'm on Twitter. That's the only way I would ever get a hold of you guys. That's my only thing. Daniel?
Yeah, Twitter's my only thing as well. I'm at DRDSM.
And Lyrian, how about you?
Here as well, at Lyrian Fleur, LYRIANFLEUR.
Perfect. Okay, we are going to skip our diagnostic cycle this week and jump straight into our prime directives.
I do not concur with your captain's decision.
She's following our prime directive.
Define prime directive.
Okay, so for those of you scoring at home, this episode and topic, actually this is funny. This is a bit of a predestination paradox that we're in right now, because way back on episode 70 of Trek Ranks, we were doing our scenes in a cave, and something in that show sparked the idea to do scenes on Earth. So at the time, I just randomly threw it out there that, hey, that's a great idea. We're going to do that in the future. Maybe we'll do it like episode 93. So here we are. It's episode 93. It is a true predestination paradox. It came up about a year ago, and now we're doing our top five scenes on Earth in episode 93. That's how we do it on Trek Ranks. So, Jen, starting with you, this topic, it's pretty straightforward. Star Trek scenes that take place on Earth. So how did you define your prime directive in order to finalize your picks?
Well, I actually ended up with three full lists for this. I picked a load of episodes I liked that had scenes on Earth, and I realized I could split them into three categories. So you've got scenes on Earth where it's not really Earth, scenes on Earth, but it's not in real time, it's more time travel, or it's on Earth in the time that the episode actually took place. So I decided to, well, I made three lists, one for each, and I've decided to pick just episodes where they're on Earth in the time that the episode actually took place. So no time travel in this one. I've got another list completely for time travel. So,
okay, that is interesting and definitely something that I took into consideration as well. Dana, how about you?
So I did not do as much in-depth research here. What I thought was, just off the top of my head, are there any nice scenes that just stood out to me over the years? And I've been watching Star Trek for maybe 20 years, more than 20 years. And just, are there any that stuck with me? So some of these are just small moments. Some of these have no importance to the plot. And I did decide to look at scenes that were in the past or alternate timelines, or even on the holodeck when they're supposed to be on Earth in the holodeck.
Yes, that's another option for sure. Okay, I love that. So that's the opposite. And Daniel, how about you?
Okay, my key thinking here was infinite diversity. So I wanted my five picks to be from five different shows and five different locations. And I mean, this could have easily been, you know, the top five scenes in San Francisco, obviously, right?
But yeah, that's a good point. You said that, I started thinking, I wonder if all mine are in San Francisco.
But yeah, so that was my my logic for my list.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I love it. Lyrian, how about you? How'd you break it down?
I had a simple how did this scene make me feel kind of approach. I literally just jotted down the first few things that came to mind, and my picks haven't changed very much from that. For some reason, when I was writing them down, I wrote a sentence like, it's a scene on Earth that dot, dot, dot. And so I wrote down how it made me feel. But my prime directive is pretty straightforward. Yeah.
That is a classic prime directive that I use frequently. Just the ones you brainstorm and you want to talk about. All right, and so I'm close to you, Jen. I thought about those three different ways to do it, but the only one I eliminated was basically no holodeck or Earth simulations. So I decided to keep time travel and alternate realities in play for all my picks, but just ruled out the hollow suites and other simulations. So pretty happy with my list. I ended up with a lot of heavy hitters this week. So maybe a few deep cuts, but mostly pretty big moments. So, okay, I think we're going to cover a lot of ground here. We're going to do a little bit more of a speed round for these picks as we get into the order of things.
I am a Jem'Hadar. He is a Vorta. It is the order of things.
Okay, thank you, Third Remodiclon. And as always, just a quick reminder on how we're going to go through the order of things. First, everyone will start with their five-word summary and a hashtag to tease their pick. Then we'll each reveal our top five scene on Earth and the specific reasons we are highlighting it and the episode in which it appeared. Then at the end, we'll ask everyone for a few secondary system selections for the picks that just missed our list. And as always, if we have any duplicate picks, make sure you listen for the Defiant Torpedoes. Okay, Jen, we are going to kick off with you. What's your number five pick for your top five scenes on Earth?
Okay, so my five words, what happens on the mountain, hashtag stays there. This is Enterprise, season 4, episode 3, Home.
Oh, yes.
In particular, the rock climbing scenes. I mean, it's a great episode all around. It's a bit like it's Enterprise's family episode where they're coming home after everything that's happened in the Zindi and the Expanse. But it's in particular, it's the rock climbing scenes with Hernandez and Archer. And I really like the character and I wish we'd seen a bit more of her. The other podcast I've been on recently, which is the Trek Book Club. We talked about Destiny, which I've been talking about a lot. So I really enjoy that. And I just love those characters.
That I love this pick. I definitely thought about it. Erica Hernandez is just an amazing character. So great. We got an episode with so much of her in it. Anybody have a quick take on Home from season 4 of Enterprise?
It was so close to being on my list. That's a really great pick. Yeah, like you guys, I love Hernandez. Is a great character. And yeah, the dynamic between her and Archer, which really reveals how kind of broken he is by this kind of traumatic Zindi ordeal. It's really rich stuff. So that's a great pick.
Yeah, totally agree, Daniel. Love this pick. And man, I wish we could see more of Erica Hernandez someday because she's an awesome character. Okay, Dana, let's go on to you. Your number five pick.
Okay, my five words for my number five pick is first contact is a lie, hashtag very pleasant. And my pick is when the Vulcans in Carbon Creek finally resign themselves to staying on Earth long term. And we just kind of see their day-to-day lives and integrated into human society, fixing sinks, mining, watching TV, and I Love Lucy is on. And it's one of my favorite episodes. And it's just, it wouldn't be a Trek Ranks list if I didn't have an Enterprise episode.
Where are you going?
To the ship.
Why?
This antenna is inadequate. I believe I can use a waveform discriminator to enhance it.
It'll be safer to go after dark. You can't risk being followed.
I need to go now. I Love Lucy is on tonight.
Oh, and Carbon Creek is perfect. We're starting off with two Enterprise episodes. We love Mistrell on Trek Ranks. He comes up a lot. I love it. Anybody have a quick thought on Carbon Creek from season 2 of Enterprise?
This was another one that nearly made my list. I ended up with actually quite a few Enterprise ones, so it didn't quite make the final cut. But yeah, great episode.
Yeah, it is. It's there are so many iconic moments from this episode. Fantastic. Okay, speed round. We're continuing. Daniel, what is your round 5 pick?
Old friend brings bad news. Hashtag Stargazer reunion. This is the scene where Picard is visited by his old friend, Dr. Benayoun, from Picard, Season 1, Episode 2, Maps and Legends. And this is a scene that I think a lot of people would kind of pass by without lingering on too much. But it really struck me for a couple of reasons. The scene is that we get this old friend of Picard's who we assume was the former chief medical officer on the Stargazer, visiting Picard to give him this kind of devastating prognosis that he isn't cleared for interstellar service, that he's in fact very, very sick indeed. But the performances are so great. David Paymer plays Dr. Benayoun. He's a great character actor. And we can really see the kind of the fondness between them, the emotional pain between them at this moment. But what I really loved about it was that I think we all knew Picard was going to be about the character's history. And it would be about his history on the Enterprise D, the stuff that we all saw on Next Generation. And it would be about what he did next. I don't think I expected the show to like reach back to the time before Next Generation when he was on the Stargazer. So I thought that was such a brilliant detail to bring in someone from the Stargazer for this moment. So I really like this scene. The acting's great. And yeah, it's kind of struck me oddly as really memorable from that season of Picard.
Your med scan came in at or above Starfleet minimums in every category. Cardiovascular, metabolic, cognitive. For a relic, you're in excellent shape. Just that little abnormality in the parietal lobe.
I was told a long time ago that it might cause a problem eventually.
Loss of appetite, mood swings, unsettling dreams, inappropriate displays of anger on interplanetary news hollows.
What do you think it is?
I'd need to run more tests. It could be one of a number of related syndromes.
Prognosis? Come on, let's have it, Dr. Benayoun.
A few are treatable, but they all end the same way. Some sooner than others.
Yeah, this scene absolutely gave me chills. It's a forgotten classic moment from those first three episodes that feel like just one big movie. This scene floored me when it aired because of the way all of a sudden when you realize, oh, the Iremodic syndrome is a thing. They're actually playing off of that.
Yeah.
And it's a big storyline. The acting is incredible. David Paymer, his first ever Star Trek appearance after just, you know, a 30, 40 year amazing career as a character actor. Powerful, powerful scene. And for sure, for me, for this pick, this pick will tie in with one of my picks that's coming up, which is kind of crazy that a lot of these are going to link together in that way. And I'm going to keep track of you, Daniel. So that's now you have one in Le Barre, France.
See
what your other four locations are. Okay, Lyrian, what is your round five pick?
My number five pick, my five words are: Kim trades everything for nothing. # Vulcan Mocha extra sweet. It's Voyager's non sequitur. I chose a scene on Earth that made me realize I am not cut out to be a Starfleet officer. So in this episode, you know, Kim interacts with some time stream and reality changes and he finds himself back on Earth. And the scene I chose is Harry basically explaining to this alien why he can't accept this reality and he has to go back. And the alien's sort of saying, you know, he's a lucky guy. He's got everything that he ever wanted. Why would he want to leave? And Harry says, you know, yeah, but what about Tom Paris and the ensign that's now on Voyager? They weren't so lucky. You know, Tom, in this reality, he doesn't get a chance to redeem himself. And now that other ensign is stranded, you know, and it just made me think that, you know, Kim often gets underappreciated because he's kind of a bit of a goody two shoes character and no one ever likes that. Right. But I argue, especially in this scene, you know, he displays the very best characteristics of a Starfleet officer, and that's that he puts others before himself. And, you know, today we live in a very individualistic society, but he's a guy who's willing to risk everything just to put something right because, you know, he got something that he didn't deserve and he can't live with it. So I really like that the stakes in this episode are insanely high. The alien tells him he could end up a billion years in the past, but he still chooses to do the right thing. And, you know, hey, he does break a million rules, you know, and steals a ship to do it. So he's a cool goody two shoes. But I just like it because it reminds me that I'm watching people who be way better than I would ever be. And I love that aspirational aspect of Trek. I could never do it.
I love this pick because I definitely considered it and I rewatched it. And this was close on my list, definitely on my secondary systems. It's funny because I was considering the scene with Kim and Paris in the bar in Sandrine's in Marseille when Kim tries to talk him into helping him a little bit. And I like your pick much better because that seems it's much more profound that Harry was willing to sacrifice for
so much
for everybody else in this situation. So that's an awesome pick. It's a great underrated twisty Brandon Braga scripted episode. Anybody on non sequitur have a thought?
Yeah, I almost picked this one as well. Harry is, I think, my favorite character on Voyager and has been since I first watched it when I was like 10 years old.
Yay, Harry.
So I absolutely love him. And I think I would have picked the scene where Harry and Tom break into Starfleet and they kind of realize there's no going back here. And I think it's it's a really good character episode for Harry. And it's just, it does show that he's willing to sacrifice himself just to make the world a better place.
Very, very underrated episode for sure. Okay, let's close out round five with my number five pick. It's a big one. Five words and a hashtag. Retinax 5 and Romulan Ale hashtag Bones pushes Kirk back to the big chair, and it is Kirk celebrating his birthday on Earth in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. I mean, The Wrath of Khan is one of the biggest episodes, movies in the history of Trek, and one of the big crossover moments for Star Trek, because everyone knows The Wrath of Khan, and sandwiched between all those huge moments of the Kobayashi Maru and Seti Alpha 5 and Kirk versus Khan and Genesis, the death of Spock. I just always remember this perfect little scene at the front of the movie when Bones shows up on Kirk's birthday to give him a gift, which of course is the antique glasses that show up later in the voyage home, but also just to kick him in the butt about getting his command back and getting back into space. And I love their conversation. But the main reason I picked this is I always love the moment right before this scene when Kirk and Spock are at Starfleet HQ, and Spock's basically saying he needs to get back to the ship and get his young crew prepped for their training voyage. And then he asks Kirk where he's headed, and he just very quiet and sadly says, "Home." And it's so sad that Kirk's not doing what he wants to do. So I love this moment, and it's obviously a big part of Kirk's overall story. So anybody have a comment on Kirk and Bones and the Wrath of Khan?
I think that's a really good pick, Jim. I mean, I love that film, like you, I suppose, for the way it's bookended. You know, there's so much power in at the beginning. Kirk says he feels old,
yep.
And then at the end, with tears in his eyes, he says he feels young. It's just such a brilliant way to tie this thematic bow on all this incredible actions and thrills in the middle. So yeah, I think that's a great, great pick, and good reasons for it too.
I'm surprised I didn't think of this one, because I say I'm still waiting for the invention of Retinax to put me out of a job. But
oh, that's right. That's right. The optometrist in the room lobbying against the Retinax 5. That's pretty good. Okay, let's go to round four. And Jen, what's your number four pick?
Okay, my five words. Shipyard starts the whole adventure. Hashtag space is dangerous. This is from Star Trek 09. And it's the scene where Kirk is about to sort of go off to join Starfleet, and he rides up to the shipyards on his bike. And I just love the look of the shipyards. This is really about just how it looks. It looks, you can see the size of some of the ships, and it just looks impressive. And it's where it sort of all starts off, and it kicks off the, you meet Bones the first time, and it kicks off that relationship and getting him into Starfleet. The rest of the story wouldn't happen if that didn't happen.
I love this. I did not consider that the actual scene with really the introduction of Bones when he comes in and is wreaking havoc on that shuttle is actually on Earth. That's brilliant. This is it's an iconic moment, visually stunning, like you said, and just a great introduction of all these characters. I love this movie. Kelvin Timeline, anybody have a comment on this pick?
It's sort of put the whole series, I think, to perspective. You just kind of, you see that ship kind of there and being built, and you're like, oh my god, we're in for a really good ride. And it was, I loved seeing this movie, and that scene especially stood out for me.
So true. And just, you could maybe say it's a little cliched or heavy-handed with him driving up on the motorcycle and kind of getting off and throwing it, but it just works. It just really works.
It works so well. I wish if I'd thought of this one, I would have picked it too. It's such a great moment.
It really
is. It is an interesting juxtaposition between the motorcycle and the spaceship, and I thought that was really cool.
Oh, that's cool too. Yeah. Okay, Dana, how about you? What's your number four pick?
So my number four pick, I kind of cheated and did six words. So my six words are baseball, root beer, darts, and atom bombs. Hashtag, we just want to sell you things. And I chose the scene from Little Green Men, which is a time travel episode, where they go back in time to 1947, I think, Roswell, and the humans capture the Ferengis. It's Rom, Nog, and Quark, and their universal translators are broken, and they can't communicate with the humans, and the humans can't communicate with the Ferengi, and it's just this really comical scene where they can't understand each other, and it sounds like gibberish, and then they start banging their heads, and the humans start mimicking them, banging their heads, and it's just, it's a great episode.
It's a classic, all-time great Deep Space Nine episode. Comes up a lot, definitely on my secondary systems. Anyone else with the Little Green Men?
Obviously, this didn't meet my prime directive for this list, but it was definitely on my other list. So my five words for that were Ferengi invasion force landing parties, hashtag Cleveland.
Love it.
And Australia gets a shout out to the, from Nog there.
Oh, yes.
What are they doing?
Maybe their universal translators are broken too.
No, they don't have universal translators. I recognize those uniforms from my guidebook. They're from the 20th century.
The 20th century? You mean we traveled back through time?
More than 400 years. Those are military uniforms from one of the old nation states. Australia or something.
So if they don't have universal translators, then why are they banging their heads?
They're just mimicking us. I'd always heard primitive humans lacked intelligence, but I had no idea they were this stupid.
They weren't just stupid. They were violent, petty, bigoted, and selfish.
Then we're stuck here with them. Maybe for the rest of our lives.
The three of us and millions of primitive humans. I like those odds.
There's just so much going on in this episode. It's brilliant microcosm of the American way, sadly. Okay, Daniel, how about you? What's your number four pick?
Okay, number four pick, five words and a hashtag. One small moment of happiness, hashtag Commander Nog. This is a scene where adult Jake Sisko in an alternate future celebrates winning a literary award from Deep Space Nine, The Visitor. This is in the Louisiana Bayou near New Orleans. So I think we all know this episode. This is a scene between Ben Sisko's subspace reappearances where Jake has finally got closure. And it's like the only happy moment that we see in his adult life. And to me, it's very inspiring and comforting. You know, he's married to a Bajoran woman and they seem really happy. We hear that, you know, Quark got his moon and he's living there very happily. And the thing that really struck me about this scene at the time and has only deepened for me recently is the portrayal of Nog. Because at this moment in Deep Space Nine, Nog was only just going off to the academy. We didn't know necessarily that he would graduate, that he would pursue a career in Starfleet. And this is the first time we see him as a fully fledged Starfleet officer. And it's also, I think, really important that they didn't recast. It's Aaron Eisenberg in the role of Nog, obviously recast for the role of adult Jake. So it's Aaron's first time playing Nog as an adult instead of a teenager. Yeah, I mean, you know, Nog is my favorite character in all of Star Trek. And this scene is one that you could certainly, there are other moments in this episode that are hugely you know, emotional and memorable. But it was somehow this moment, a snatch of happiness to see Jake and Nog living so well as adults that really, really struck me. And yeah, I mean, obviously with Aaron's passing, it means more to me now than it did then. So yeah, this is one of my favorite scenes on Earth, I think.
Amazing. Such a deep cut. I never would have thought of this particular moment from this episode because it is. It's that bittersweet one moment of adult happiness for Jake and with Nog there. So back-to-back Nog picks. I love that. Also one of our favorite all-time characters.
Did you see the station?
I'm sorry to say it's looking a little run down these days. But you'll never guess who's still there.
Not your father.
No, no. He and my uncle left years ago. Quark finally got that little moon he was always talking about. And my father, as usual, is making sure it doesn't fall out of orbit. But Morn is still there, running the bar.
Talking his customers' ears off and drinking himself out of business all day.
Well, why don't we get to the point of today's little celebration?
to my dear friend, Jake Sisko, winner of this year's Beitar Prize for his collected stories. May the years continue to be good to you. May your muse continue to inspire you. And may someone make a holo program out of one of your stories so you can start raking in the latinum.
anyone else with a thought on The Visitor? This is beautiful.
The only thing that I'll say is that any time that The Visitor gets brought up on this podcast, I'm always listening and
yeah.
A tear always comes to my eye. Every time. It kills me.
Yeah, if I had chosen like a different scene, I would have started crying, I think, while I was talking about it. So
yeah.
That is the absolute truth. Okay, well, Lirian, how about you? What's your number four pick?
Pew, 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 pew.
Oh, duplicate.
My five words are, Quark is the Roswell alien. Hashtag five-word pitch. It's Deep Space Nine's little green man. And I had to choose the scene on Earth that gives an Aussie shout-out. Come on.
Yes, that's fantastic. We just mentioned it.
Yeah. So I had to pick the scene where they awake on Earth because it's the closest we actually get to being in Australia on Star Trek, I think. Right. Anyone correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm going to take it. It's a scene where Nog says that the uniforms of the military officers are from some old nation state, Australia or something. And yeah, I'll take it. And I love this episode. It's one of my favorites of all time. And my five words and a hashtag are actually true. This was the five-word pitch given to Renee Echevarria as an episode idea. And it makes total sense. Quark is the Roswell alien. I just love that this is just a bonkers episode, but it also has that classic Trek social commentary with the Ferengi basically in disbelief about how insane 20th century humans were. You know, we get called stupid, violent, petty, bigoted, selfish. And Quark can't believe we, you know, irradiated our own planet with nuclear bombs. And I can't argue with any of it. Anyway, it's ridiculous and it's classic Trek at the same time. So I love it.
Fantastic. And I was just thinking there are a couple of Alice Springs references in Enterprise. So that's pretty close to an Australia appearance as well.
Love it.
All right. Anybody else have a final comment on Little Green Men? Love this episode.
The only thing I would say is that when you gave this topic, Jim, for like a minute, I was thinking that all five scenes would be from this episode because it's so rich and it's scripted so nicely. And I thought you probably could just about choose five distinct scenes that are really great scenes from this one story. But yeah. Cooler heads prevailed on that score. But yeah, it's a really, really rich episode and it's a really funny episode.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, we had three straight from Deep Space Nine. Love it. My round four pick is five words and a hashtag. He knows, Doctor. He knows. Hashtag the ultimate sacrifice. It is Kirk letting Edith Keeler die in the city on the edge of forever. Another quintessential moment, not just in Trek, but really the history of science fiction. It's that big. And it's this episode is just such an original kind of mind-bending moment from, you know, 1967, just so far ahead of its time. The heroine must die in order to prevent Germany and Hitler from winning World War II. It's a super original, crazy concept. And the staging on this scene, you're talking about one that always brings a tear to my eye. It's this one. It's just powerful, powerful stuff with the way they, I mean, that truck across the street and the way they film it and the emotion of those guys all being reunited and their elation. And then her death, you know, just literally seconds after, it's just so visceral and you can just feel it through the screen. And I love this moment and I knew this was going to be on my list. Does anybody have a thought on the city on the edge of forever and the Edith Keeler?
I think it's one of the best TV episodes of any show ever. It's just such a good episode. And an interesting thought is this takes place, what is it, the 1937, I think, 1936. So that would be the equivalent of about 1990 today.
Okay, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
I'm sorry.
Now I'm in a literal temporal loop. That's awesome. That's an amazing thing to think about. Incredible. Yeah, just an amazing moment. Anybody else have this one hit them in the feels?
This one was on my list for real Earth, but time travel. I'm going to have to put these lists up later after the episode drops.
I love it. Yeah, you should do your alternate list as well.
And now, as I'm sure that somebody out there has said, it's time to pay for the soup.
Okay, fantastic. Let's go to the soup round. Jen, what's your number three pick?
Okay, my number three pick. Five words. Research team unearths nasty surprise. Hashtag 100% fresh frozen Borg. Hashtag Captain Borg's Eye. This is Enterprise, Season 2, Episode 23, Regeneration.
I love it.
I think the last time I was on, I did Borg episodes, and this one didn't quite make my list for that, so I'll get to pick it here. Particularly the scenes at the beginning with the Arctic Research Station where they've found something and they don't really know what it is, but we do. It's really creepy because you know what could happen. And I love the way that they do the Borg in Enterprise. They don't say it's the Borg. They don't know it's the Borg. And it kind of links into First Contact and the things that have happened. I just really do enjoy this episode.
I love this pick. I thought of this one as well. I was thinking, my first thought was, wait, this one's time travel? No, it's not really. This is one of those time paradoxes, but I guess this actually happened.
It's there because of time travel, but actually, yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually in real time.
It absolutely makes sense. I love it. Anybody else have a quick thought on regeneration? Dan, I know you do.
Oh, yes. I picked this episode on my first Trek Ranks appearance because of the score.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So it's a really standout episode, I think, in Star Trek in general. I think they made the Borg really, really creepy. It was a different take on the Borg, and I really, really appreciated that. And the first scene on Earth where you're like, I know what that is. It's really well done.
Yeah, it's obviously a playoff of the Thing, and It Came from Outer Space, which is never a bad thing. Two awesome classic sci-fi movies. And we get John Billingsley's wife as one of the doctors that gets assimilated at the beginning. Benita, I don't know how to say her last name, like Frederic or something. But anyway, love this pick. Love Regeneration. Classic Enterprise episode. Okay, Dana, how about you? What's your soup round pick?
Okay, so I took a liberty here and did something that I'm not sure is allowed. So my five words are Chekhov chills with cute ponies, hashtag on the run. And my scene is from the book Traitor Wins by L.A. Graff.
Ooh, we love cheating on Trek Ranks. This might be our first actual straight up book pick. And L.A. Graff,
I love L.A.
Yeah,
Graff.
That's the amalgamation of a couple of authors, right?
Yes. I want to say, I'm not going to say because I can't remember.
I have no idea their names, but that crew wrote some of the best.
They wrote a few others.
Some of the great Trek 90s books. Okay, yeah. So this was Traitor Wind. I do not know this book.
It's a really, really good book. So I first read it when I was in high school. I was probably about 15. And I think this was the first L.A. Graff book I read. And I was like, this is one of the best books I've read. And I was obsessed. And I read all their other books afterwards. But the main bit of the story is Chekhov is framed for murder. Sulu is embroiled in treason and they have to run. So Chekhov hides on this tiny little island called Assateague Island, which is off the coast of Maryland. And if you're a horse person, you know what Chincoteague and Assateague is because there's the Misty of Chincoteague story. So being a horse person, it's actually a place I've been to before. And they have all these wild ponies on the island and they just like roam around and they're the cutest little things ever. So I'm reading the Star Trek book and suddenly Chekhov is in this random island I've been to. And it was just the most like weirdest combination of two worlds. And I thought it was just a really nice surprise. And that book kind of stayed with me throughout the years. And I'm in the middle of rereading it now, and you know what? It still holds up. It's a really, really good book.
And it's a TOS era book?
Yes, obviously. Yeah, it takes place, I think it's the third book in the Lost Years series. So it's in that in between.
That makes sense. Yeah, I know that. That series. Okay, a book pick, Trader Wind. Anybody have a comment on that's awesome that it's that's so personal to you that you knew that island when you were reading the book. That's amazing.
I love Star Trek books. I've read a bunch of them. I haven't read that one. I'm going to put it on my to-read list immediately. And I will let you know what I think. That's really cool.
Fantastic. I love it. Okay, let's go. Well, I'm going to add this. When you said that about the island in Chekhov, I immediately went to, because I grew up on an island in San Diego, and the scene from The Voyage Home where Chekhov and Uhura are on the rocks and they see the Enterprise ship was filmed on the island I grew up on. And when I remember seeing that in the theater, like, wait, I know exactly that spot. It's like right down by the bay. So that just popped into my head when you said that, adding it. Might edit that out. We'll see. Okay, let's go to Daniel's round three pick. What do you got?
Okay, five words and a hashtag. I wish I weren't Klingon. Hashtag worst dad ever. And this is B'Elanna's flashback to a camping trip she took with her father from the season 7 Voyager episode Lineage. Again, I love B'Elanna Torres. I love episodes about her Klingon identity and her troubled relationship with her Klingon heritage. And this is an episode that it starts off with like a really light, fun energy where B'Elanna realizes that she's pregnant and the news spreads around the gossipy crew. And then it gets really dark because she starts having these kind of traumatic flashbacks to a camping trip that she took with her father, who is human, and his human family, where she was kind of bullied by her cousins and felt like she didn't belong. And there's a kind of climactic scene at the end of this flashback sequence that I think is so painful and yet so brilliant, where her dad gives what I'm pretty confident in saying is maybe the worst parental pep talk in the history of American television, where, you know, she's crying and she goes to him and she feels like nobody loves her. And he basically says, you know, you're just too sensitive, get over it. And she doesn't get over it. And she hides in the bushes. And then she sees her dad talking to his brother, her uncle. And her uncle says, you know, B'Elanna's a good kid. And her own father like disagrees with him and says, no, she's not. She's too sensitive. And he's just moaning about how hard it is living with Klingons and feeling sorry for himself. And B'Elanna hears it all. And I mean, it's a really distressing scene. And, you know, they portray her father very badly, I mean, very deliberately. But what I love about this scene is the way it really deepens our understanding of B'Elanna. It's just exquisite the way we suddenly, it all clicks into place. You know, the self-loathing. And she says, I wish I weren't Klingon. And this kind of deeply internalized kind of hatred and guilt. She thinks that her father hated her for being Klingon. And that's why he left. And that's why she hates herself for being Klingon. And I love when, you know, a prequel story is done well in Star Trek, when you go back and you fill in a piece of a character's history and it really deepens our connection to them. And that's exactly what happens here. So yeah, it's just, it's hard to watch. And it's really troubling, I think, but it's so brilliantly brings us closer to B'Elanna's kind of constant mental state that I adore this moment from Voyager.
Lineage is straight up one of the most underrated, under-talked about great episodes of Star Trek. It's what is happening in this episode is so powerful and poignant, and there aren't easy answers in terms of how all the characters are thinking and responding. And I just think it's handled beautifully, and this flashback is really, really powerful. Like you said, it's such a massive fill in the blank on B'Elanna's character and her development, and such an understanding for the 6 years now that you've seen previously of her and the anger and some of the issues that she had is amazing character that's so popular. So incredible. I love this deep cut pick. Anyone have a take on Lineage and this flashback for B'Elanna on her sad camping trip to Earth?
I can't believe I didn't think of this one, because it's a wonderfully done episode. When you said about the worst father, I was immediately thinking of Worf. But
that's what I thought too.
Me too.
We have a new worst father. It's kind of sad that there's a worse father than Worf.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you don't think about the Earth part of this episode, so it's a really, really clever pick.
Such a great pick. If I'd thought of it, I would have picked it as well. Such a great episode. And it's such a deeply personal story mm-hmm. that's connected to that larger piece about genetic manipulation.
Yep.
I just love the way this episode marries those two perfectly, so we're not, you know, sort of hit over the head with it. But I can't believe it took us, you know, 6 years to get that B'Elanna backstory, but it just works perfectly.
Yes, the deeply personal is a great way to say it, because it's like no one's wrong in this episode. You know, you understand literally everybody's perspective in this episode. It's just this quintessential Trek. Really, really smart. Love it. Okay, Lyrian, what is your soup round pick?
So for my number three pick, my five words are, must speak to the maid, #goo. It's the Next Generation's All Good Things Part 2. And I chose a scene on Earth that works perfectly for the soup round. This is the scene where Q takes Picard back around 3.5 billion years to watch the primordial soup of humanity.
Oh my God. This is the first scene on Earth.
That's amazing.
Yes.
It's so good.
The first soup scene.
It's so good.
So this is one. It's one of the most crucial scenes in the finale, because we can finally see what the stakes are in this thing. You know, Picard could actually prevent our existence. It's great tension, and I like that it's a sort of honest, a little bit of an intellectual, more intellectual interaction with Q that we get every now and again, where Q and Picard get to talk in large, big picture, epic terms about the potential of humanity. So I love that it's epic, and it's kind of sci-fi at its core. So I love it.
Yeah, brilliant. The first scene on Earth. I love it. I thought maybe you were going somewhere else with All Good Things, but wow, that is a awesome, awesome deep cut. Anyone else on this one?
This is on my time travel list. And my five words were, this little pool of goo. So we both managed to get the goo in. #humanity's humble origins. Yeah, it's fantastic. This was one of the first things I thought of, and I was so gutted to have to cut it off my main list because it was time travel rather than in real time.
I'm floored that two people thought of this one. That is incredible. Such a great pick. Super deep cut. Okay, let's close out round three with my pick. Five words and a #. Look beyond your provincial attitudes, #, and volatile nature. And it is from Enterprise, Broken Bow, the series premiere. And this is the scene that really introduces everything for all of this series. We see the introduction of Klingons to humans. Oh, this is the scene where basically Archer meets T'Pol and is arguing with a bunch of Vulcans as they discuss what they're going to do with the injured Klingon that's on Earth. And so, yeah, you get the introduction of Klingons to humans, and you get all this early Klingon culture stuff that's being revealed to the 22nd century for the first time. You see the conflict between the Vulcans and the humans. Again, this is all new stuff. So now you've got Saval's, you know, wants to push the launch back, and Archer clearly cannot stand Saval. It also introduces this really smart way to get Phlox on the ship when they basically are calling the Klingon a corpse, and Archer storms into the room. Is this man dead? Is he going to die? Not necessarily. Love that moment. You're introduced to Archer here as really being a bit impulsive and impetuous, maybe a little bit impertinent. It's really great stuff for his introduction. You also get the introduction of Admiral Forrest, who's this stuck in the middle bureaucrat who's obviously trying to toe the line between the Vulcans and being supportive of his captain. And then the best part of all, you get to T'Pol telling Archer that they need to prove that they're ready to look beyond their provincial attitudes and volatile nature. And Archer says, volatile? You have no idea how much I'm restraining myself from knocking you on your ass. A perfect introduction to their relationship, where it's going to go. I love it. And even at the very end, when Saval kind of raises his voice and Archer calls him out, when your logic doesn't work, you raise your voice. I love this scene. It's one of the reasons I love Broken Bow so much, and it's my favorite Star Trek pilot. Spectacular.
Excuse me, is this man dead?
His autonomic system was disrupted by the blast, but his redundant neural functions
are still... Is he going to die?
Not necessarily.
Let me get this straight. You're going to disconnect this man from life support, even though he could live. Now, where is the logic in that?
Klang's culture finds honor in death. If they saw him like this, he'd be disgraced.
They're a warrior race. They dream of dying in battle. If you understood the complexities of interstellar diplomacy...
So that's your diplomatic solution, to do what they tell you? Pull the plug?
Your metaphor is crude, but accurate.
We may be crude, but we're not murderers. You're not going to let them do this, are you?
The Klingons have demanded that we return Klang immediately.
Admiral...
We may need to defer to their judgment.
We've been deferring to their judgment for 100 years.
John.
How much longer?
Until you've proven you're ready.
Ready to what?
To look beyond your provincial attitudes and your volatile nature.
Volatile? You have no idea how much I'm restraining myself from knocking you on your ass.
Anyone with a take on Broken Bow?
It's my favorite pilot as well. I think Enterprise managed to get the characterization perfect in the first episode. We know who everybody is and kind of what they're like. We know what to expect, and that first like 10 minutes, it says a lot about everybody.
Yeah, I think this is a great pick. When you gave me the topic, one of my first thoughts was, how can I talk about Klingons, because I am obsessed with Klingons.
Yeah.
And I did it through B'Elanna, obviously, but I could have easily talked about the Klingon scene that we get at the opening of this episode, because it is, as you say, very quickly every character is established, why we like them and why they will not like each other, I guess, and it works so well.
Yeah, you get that, and then I actually thought you might pick this one. I was thinking, yeah, you might, because you get the Vulcan introduction, but you also get this like backstory, like where they're literally like, you don't understand the Klingons.
Yeah.
If you show up there and he's dead, you're not doing, and he's alive, you're not doing him a favor. Really, really good stuff. Okay, we are moving into round two. Jen, what's your number five? What's your number two pick?
Okay, so five words. How many are there here? # only four of us. It's DS9 episode Paradise Lost. In particular, the scene sort of about halfway through, when Sisko is sitting out in sort of the garden area, and the O'Brien comes up and talks to him, and we realize it's not O'Brien, it's the shapeshifter. And the shapeshifter O'Brien manages to be so creepy while being so friendly. I think it's a fantastic little scene, and it sort of reminds you how much damage, how much terror these shapeshifters, the changelings, the Dominion can cause with actually very few people. it's just one of those great little scenes where, first of all, Sisko doesn't realise, but he quickly catches on. And I say, great acting from Colm Meaney there. So he just gets to be so creepy and arrogant. It's a perfect changeling.
He's off just enough where you realize something's going on here, and creepy is the right word. It really is kind of a clever performance from Colm Meaney, for sure.
How many changelings do you think are here on Earth right at this moment?
I'm not going to play any guessing games with you.
Ah. What if I were to tell you that there are only four on this entire planet? Huh? Not counting Constable Odo, of course. Think of it. Just four of us. And look at the havoc we've wrought.
Love this pick. Anybody have a thought on Paradise Lost and Homefront?
I just love how wrong it is to have O'Brien be a bad guy. It's wrong. It feels wrong.
That is wrong. That is absolutely wrong.
So wrong.
And I'm just going to give a shout out to my president, Jerish Ino. I love that guy so much. I did. I definitely considered picking him from a couple of scenes in Homefront as well. A classic DS9 two-parter. Love this pick. Okay, Dana, how about you? What's your number two pick?
My number two pick, six words, because I cheated again, is now would be a good time, hashtag may I go now. And of course, it's Uhura and Chekhov break into the ship Enterprise, and then Chekhov gets caught and is interrogated. And I really could have picked all of my five picks from this movie, because this is one of my favorite movies ever. And I, as you can tell from my previous pick, I really, really like Chekhov. Him, Sulu, and Uhura are my three favorites from the original series, and they really come to life in the movies for me. And it was nice to have a scene really focused on just Chekhov and Uhura without Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, as great as they are, but we just kind of, we see them do the dangerous job, and it's a pretty tense moment in a fairly light movie, which, you know, as light as you can get when the world is going to end. But it's a really good moment between the two of them breaking in, and then Uhura goes first and Chekhov's like, you take this, and then he gets caught and he's being a little snarky dick to the security guy who catches him and then runs away. And it's a really, really well done scene.
Well, I'm glad I mentioned it, because I love when he says, and Admiral, it's the Enterprise.
Yes.
as the introduction to this this moment, a super, super cool deep cut pick. I love these two together. It's a great shout out. You don't get that really probably ever. And it's really cool. Wait, were they in the Gangsters of Triskelion? Was it the three? Yeah, I think it was Chekhov.
Was Chekhov there?
Yeah, I think it was Chekhov, Uhura, and Kirk. That would be the only other time I could think of those two interacting at such a deep level. I love this pick. Anyone else on the voyage home?
I mean, I think we all love the film. I do love that scene in particular, because I think that's when the film really starts to shift in tone to being more of like a madcap, you know, 80s adventure movie, where there's the frantic running, and then the music is very playful. And it's I guess delightful is the word I would use to describe that whole sequence, because it really is. It's like high stakes, but it's simultaneously zero stakes, because it's so fun. And yeah, it's a really, really nice moment, I think, from a really nice film.
And somehow still quintessentially Star Trek, and that it captures that Trouble with Tribbles kind of vibe. It's becomes a little bit farcical with the running around there, and then the running around the hospital. But still my all-time favorite Star Trek movie. I love it. Definitely.
Me too.
There's so many scenes from this. The one I really considered hard from this episode movie was the Italian, the yes, no, yes, no.
Yes.
Conversation in the truck of Jillian. Classic. Okay, Daniel, how about you? What's your number two pick?
Okay, I'm wading into controversial territory here. Five words and a hashtag, the beginning of the future, hashtag a smile and a hug. This is backstage before Archer's keynote speech to the nascent alliance from These Are the Voyages, the Enterprise finale. So this perfectly bookmarks your last pick, Jim. And this is a really short scene, and the whole episode is interesting and problematic in ways that I'm not going to get into. But this single scene in isolation, it moves me. You know, it brings tears to my eyes. It's the end of this incredible journey for these characters. And it's Phlox and T'Pol and Archer. And he's pacing nervously. And T'Pol is like fussing over him and straightening his collar in a very fond way that would seem so uncharacteristic for a Vulcan, but is so earned by this point in the narrative. And Phlox just gives him a couple of words of encouragement, very optimistic about, you know, this alliance will expand before we know it. And then we get the iconic Phlox smile that, you know, is impossible to physically achieve on anyone other than a Denobulan. And then there's this moment between Archer and T'Pol that it crashes me every time, where just as he's walking out, she says, "You look very heroic."
Mm.
And again, the layers of meaning from her, this is as close as she could get to expressing like platonic love, I think. And he comes back and he hugs her, and it's just such a great, and then he walks out to this thunderous applause. And I know a lot of people are bummed that we don't get to see the actual speech, but for me, it's this moment before the connection between Archer and T'Pol, you know, from knocking her on her ass 4 seasons earlier to this moment. it just really moves me. And it's just, I think Enterprise is great. And this moment is just, you know, this is as optimistic and profound as Star Trek gets. And it's a lovely, lovely way to end the series, I think. Which is not a common opinion, but I really love this moment.
Please, stand still. If you hadn't waited until the last minute, you would have had time to memorize your speech.
You sound like my 9th grade teacher.
There are dignitaries here from 18 different worlds. It's a good sign. I wouldn't be surprised if this alliance begins to expand before we know it. You should be very proud of yourself, Captain. Mm.
I'd be proud of myself if I get the speech out in one piece.
That's not what I meant.
I know what you meant, Fox. And I appreciate it. But this is not about me.
Why do so many humans refuse to take credit where credit is due? There are times when modesty and humility are quite illogical.
Whenever you're ready, sir.
Well, I've got 3 wives waiting. I'd better go and join them. I'd wish you good luck, Captain. But you've always had an ample supply.
Thank you, Doctor.
It's a really good bookend to my pick. I can't believe that. This is a great moment. I did not consider it. You can say a lot of things about These Are the Voyages, but there are a lot of things it does right. And this scene is absolutely epic. It's emotional. It's a great payoff. Yeah, I just did not think of this one, and it's really a perfect way to show the beginning of Star Trek at the end of Star Trek when you put it in its most basic terms. I love it. Anybody else on this end of These Are the Voyages?
I actually really like this episode, and I know a lot of people don't like it, but I do think it's like, you know, obviously there's a few things I could do without in the episode, but I think it's a good way to end. Like you said, it's a nice final scene for Star Trek. And that was the final scene we got for 12 years before Discovery came on the air. It was a good way to end. And that characterization, that friendship arc between T'Pol and Archer, I think is one of my favorites. And that kind of captures it perfectly.
I mean, I've always said it's maybe not the best finale episode because of the story kind of going off in a little bit of a unrelated territory, but how else are you going to end Star Trek? I mean, it's hard. I can't even, that's what they were basically doing at the time. They were ending it. And this is as good a way as any in terms of this, this scene and those moments. And like you said, with Phlox and T'Pol right there helping out Archer, it says so much. Love it. Okay. Lyrian, what is your number 2 pick?
A number 2 pick. My 5 words are friend, yes. Husband, no. Good. # you're blended, all right. It's First Contact, and it shows a scene on Earth that just makes me laugh every time. It's the scene where Troy gets drunk in the bar with Cochrane.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. What can I say about this scene that's new? Nothing, probably. It's just pure perfection, and my list wouldn't be right without it. So it's comic timing at its best, everything from the acting to the framing to the physical comedy, the line readings. I think it's just perfect. Every line in the scene is quotable. If you're looking for my professional opinion, a ship's counselor, he's nuts. even at STLV, so although I've been to STLV twice, and although I don't do cosplay, I do create some T-shirts with like quotes and sayings on it. And last year I did do, this is no time to argue about time. We don't have the time, because it just never fails to make me laugh.
This is a great pick. I don't think we've talked about this particular scene much on Trek Ranks, and it's so iconic. It's like you said, it's hilarious. The acting, the writing, the staging of it, the Roy Orbison. I mean, James Cromwell is absolutely epic as Zefram Cochrane. I love this moment. Did not think of it when thinking about all the possible first contact picks. So anyone have a take on Zefram and Deanna getting blitzed in First Contact?
Yeah, I love seeing this side of Troy, because for the most part, Troy was always kind of nice and level-headed and stuff, and we just see her completely plastered. It's just so true. Marina Sirtis did a really good job here.
Who is this jerk? Who called me to turn off my music?
Will Riker? Zefram Cochrane.
Good friend of yours?
Yes.
Husband?
No.
Good. Now this, Deanna.
Deanna.
This is the good stuff.
Dr. Cochrane.
To the Phoenix. May she rest in peace. Okay. That wasn't so good.
Great stuff. Okay, let's close out. Oh, it's my pick. Round two. My five words in a hashtag. Requiem for Data and Picard. Hashtag. He looks like a bloody skunk. And it's all good things, but it's a different scene. It is Picard and Geordi visiting Data at Cambridge. And this is a really short scene in a mammoth episode of Trek. And I knew I was going to pick this. It's the first thing I popped up in my head. I've always loved this moment. And when I went back to revisit it, I was floored. And this is going to tie in a little bit to your Maps and Legends pick, Daniel. I couldn't believe how this scene played after seeing the finale of season one of Star Trek Picard. Because basically, this scene, you have Picard and Geordi visiting Data at his office residence in Cambridge, where he's the chair, and he has a way about himself and this touch of gray in his hair adds the air of distinction. Everything's a little bit different about Data, and the scene is amazing. Data's evolved tons of cats. There's like 10 cats in it, which I love. There's cranky Jessel, who's helping him around the house, and they're arguing about tea. Hot, of course it's hot. And she's giving everyone the side eye. And then you have this great conversation about Picard's arimotic syndrome and how Picard literally says it's untreatable, but I don't know how much of my visions are a result of that, but I feel like they're real. And despite all their doubts, Data takes the action to help his captain and get to the bottom of his visions. And Picard gets excited that's the Data I know. And the whole thing is now an amazing companion piece to the incredible end of Star Trek Picard, when the two of them are sitting across from each other in this basically the same kind of setting, this kind of rustic library type setting, and the same kind of chairs. They're talking about mortality and death and what it all means. And I'm amazed by the way that Star Trek Picard really connected to everything that came before it. It's really incredible. And that scene means a lot more to me now. And I was going to pick it before I even went back to revisit it. Anyone have a thought on this scene with Picard, Data, Geordi, and Jessel at Cambridge?
It very nearly made my cut as well. It's on my secondary systems. My reaction to it, I guess, is different than yours, in that to me, it's much more bittersweet now. This is the future that I wish Data could have had. And I love him being this crazy cat lady, you know, like teaching full time. And it's just everything that you want for the character, really. And I wanted to pick it, but I didn't want to go back to it because it's been overridden now by Picard, which is also touching, but sadder. So yeah, it's a lovely scene. I think it's a great moment in a great episode.
Yeah, it's funny because I think the way I looked at it was the in-universe, a little bit overwritten and bittersweet, but the out-of-universe for me when I'm thinking about just all the connections and the way things interweave, I love that stuff. And I love it also made me think of one of my favorite moments in Picard when Picard is talking about maybe getting help and his Romulan help, Shaban, it's like the Romulan says to him, "Oh, we can get Worf and Geordi." And he's like, "No, we cannot go get them because I know that they will do it and they'll drop everything." And he knows this because they already did it in All Good Things, because that's a memory that Picard still has in Star Trek Picard. He has all these memories still at the end of that episode. So I thought that was really powerful. And just thinking about Picard having this memory and knowing it in that last moment with Data from Et in Arcadia. Ego. I don't know. Just all just came together for me in really powerful ways. I love it. Okay, let's go to round one. Jen, what's your number one pick for a scene on Earth?
Okay, so my last pick, magnificent meta moment meeting Musica. # not Mintaka, Cestus, Capella, Vulcan. # Raffi's trailer park. It's Picard season one, episode two, Maps and Legends. A different scene from the last one when Picard is going off to find Raffi and you find out that Raffi is living at Vasquez Rocks, and it's such a meta moment because it's such an iconic location in Trek history. It's been so many different planets. It's been in probably nearly every series and it's actually appearing as itself for the first time ever. And I just thought that was such a fantastic setting for Raffi and quite a good introduction to the character. The other thing was that they were filming there a couple of weeks before we got there.
Oh.
And we did a tour last year and went out to Vasquez Rocks with Larry Nemechek. And he was saying that he'd been out a week or so earlier, and there was a trailer covered over with some guards, and they were saying, "Oh, we're filming a commercial. And it's like, no, I don't think they were.
That's amazing. Well, I love that scene. I love the introduction of Raffi. I can't believe Maps and Legends.
I was going to say that, yeah.
Been picked twice, and we don't have the Admiral telling Picard that he's got fucking hubris. Raffi's a fantastic character. This introduction is a great way to kind of see what she's gone through and quickly define the relationship she has with Picard.
You can turn around and call that cab to take you right back where you came from.
I just want to talk.
There isn't anything you could say that I want to hear.
Secret Romulan assassins are operating on Earth.
Is that the 86?
And the meta part of this with Vasquez Rocks, just really, really clever. I appreciate that they did that. I thought that was just a smart nod to kind of Trek in general. Okay, let's go to Dana. What's your number one pick?
My number one pick comes from a perhaps controversial movie as well. So my five words are sunny skies and 70 degrees, # it's a miracle, and it's Sulu and Chekhov get lost in Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Oh, yeah. Yosemite gets a shout out. Yeah. I love it.
So I guess my top three choices are all Chekhov related, so I guess I really like this character.
That is funny.
Bad news, gentlemen. Shore leave's been canceled.
Rescued at last.
Return to prearranged coordinates for pickup.
Don't tell them you're lost. You'll never leave it down.
Is there a problem, gentlemen?
Yes. We've been caught in a blizzard.
And we can't see a thing. Request you direct us to the coordinates.
My visual says sunny skies and 70 degrees.
Sulu, look. The sun's come out. It's a miracle.
Don't worry, fellas. Your secret's safe with me.
So it was just a nice character moment in this movie. And this movie has a lot of really, really good character moments. But what really stood out to me was that you have the helmsman and the navigator of the Enterprise, the best ship in the fleet, and they can't find their way on Earth. And it's just, it's a really, really good moment between the two of them. It's like a minute long, and Uhura's all like, oh, do you need help, guys? And it's just them simulating the blizzard. And it's so well done.
The final frontier. We always laugh when it gets a pick somehow on Trek Ranks. The camping scenes on this are the highlight of the movie. So whether it's this part or obviously Kirk, Bones, and Spock doing their thing at the opening and close. Anyone else have a thought on the final frontier?
I weirdly adore Star Trek V. It was the first Star Trek film I saw at a cinema, like on a big screen when I was a kid. And I feel like it somehow got this really key point in my Star Trek DNA. And yeah, I mean, these last two picks have been really amazing deep cut picks for your like number one choices. So I'm really impressed. And yeah, that tiny moment, you're right. It's full of charm and it's really drawing on the knowledge we have of the characters and how much we like them to make this quite whimsical joke. It's a really nice moment. It's a good pick.
Whimsical. That's a good word to describe it. Okay, Daniel, how about you? What's your number one pick then? Another deep cut in us?
Well, it's another controversial film. Five words and a hashtag. Wordless sacrifice from loving father. Hashtag London calling. This is the bombing of the Kelvin Memorial Archive in Star Trek Into Darkness.
Wow.
I mean, I think this is one of the most powerful sequences in all of Trek cinema. And it's involving characters who we have never seen before, we will never see again, and yet it's so engaging. And the storytelling is so direct, I think. It's almost entirely wordless, the sequence where we see these parents and their dying daughter. It's all, we're hooked through the images, through the music, the pacing, the editing is all, this is what J.J. Abrams does very, very well, I think. This is him at his best, a moment like this in the film. So we have these loving parents, a dying daughter. They are exploited by Khan. I mean, again, we are seeing Khan as a master manipulator, because what he does every time we see him is he makes good people do bad things, whether through, romantic pressure or little eels in your ear. That's what he does, right? He makes good people do bad things. Mm-hmm. We have a British TV actor called Noel Clarke, superb, with very little screen time and not able to really talk. So emotive with his expressions as this morally compromised, emotionally tortured Section 31 agent. And it's just this perfect mini movie, I think. The power of the images. And it climaxes, of course, with this explosion. We go from a shot of this guy, Thomas Harewood, from his kind of his tear-streaked face as he puts the bomb in the water. We see the explosion, and then it cuts to the explosion happening on the horizon of London's cityscape, and then it pulls back to a framed picture of his daughter. And it's like horrifying, but he makes the choice that so many others would make in that position. It is completely relatable. I mean, honestly, Into Darkness is my favorite of the Kelvin timeline films. I think it's just brilliant. It's exciting. It's provocative. It's radically different from what's come before, yet it's true to the core of Trek. And I think this scene is all of those things as well. So as soon as you gave this topic, I knew this would be my first pick.
Okay, I love this pick because it is another deep cut. I had no idea you felt that way about Into Darkness. I am now, you're so eloquent. I'm going to have you now argue for me every time I need to argue and defend Star Trek Into Darkness, because it's really, really a good movie. People have just completely missed it through their preconceptions of what they think it is.
Yeah, I love it.
It's really, really good. This scene is awesome. I considered Into Darkness, but I love the scene between Pike, Kirk, and Spock in Pike's office. Mm. I just think that is a really smartly written scene in terms of how it deconstructs Kirk and his development. But this scene is powerful. Noel Coward, you're right, he's amazing. It's basically a wordless scene. There's basically no dialogue. And he's such a great actor, the way he conveys that. I love it. Anyone else with a take on Star Trek Into Darkness and this sad moment?
It's a fun movie.
This is probably my least watched films, and you've convinced me to go and watch it again.
You really should. You really should. I, my job is done then. If I've persuaded one person to go back and reevaluate it, then yeah, mission accomplished.
I don't know about these controversial films, but here's something controversial. I've never seen Star Trek V.
Oh.
And I've only seen Into Darkness once. So I have some watching to do.
I vote you watch Into Darkness. I think the key to Into Darkness is, yes, you're going to have, it's a major summer box office release in 2013 or whatever it was. So it's going to have all those Hollywood trappings of the big action pieces. So just accept that. That's what it is. But the Star Trek is there. It's really deep. There's a lot of really, yeah. It says, it's a movie that says a lot.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
It's there. And it's not a, it's an homage to The Wrath of Khan. It's not an aping of it. It's not a retelling. It's just really clever to use that existing framework and tell a different story about two friends who come together and realize what they mean to each other at the beginning of their friendship instead of at the end of their friendship, like in The Wrath of Khan. I will defend that movie till my dying days. Okay. Lyrian, how about you? What's your number one pick?
So for my number one pick, my five words are something I say every day, # hello computer. It's Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. And I chose a scene on Earth that I quote daily. So the scene is Scotty trying to use that computer. It's McCoy handing him the mouse with a helpful smile. It's the, oh, thank you very much, confidence from Scotty as he talks into it. I just love it. I adore it. They're having so much fun. And I chose it because it's exactly what I say to my computer multiple times a day when it's freezing or it's being slow or it just needs a bit of talking to. And I usually say it in my head or under my breath, but it always makes me smile. And one day, because I'm a giant, huge nerd, I feel like one day I just want to say it out loud in the office, you know, when the computer's being a pain, and for the person to sitting next to me just go, huh, I like that. I get that reference. And it's never going to happen.
Oh, you have to do that.
It's never going to happen. I don't work with any Trek fans. They'll just look at me like I'm insane. But yeah, that's my little fantasy.
Perhaps a professor could use your computer. Please.
Computer? Computer? Ah. Hello, computer.
Just use the keyboard.
The keyboard. How quaint.
Well, I love this scene. We love Dr. Nichols, and I cannot.
I know you do.
That's right. Yeah. Without saying, not now, Madeline. Okay. anyone else with a take on Scotty and his famous transparent aluminum from The Voyage Home?
I almost picked this scene. Like I said, there's so many good scenes from this movie, and this is definitely one of my favorites. It's very whimsical, as Daniel said.
yeah it's just, you know, it's a great moment in a great film, and it was also very, very close to being one of my picks.
Yeah, it just captures Trek in all its best possible ways. And
yeah, it didn't get that prime directive, but it would have been
that's right. I'm keeping track. All the stats, we got a lot of stats, so it's definitely falls in the alternate timeline category. And yes, I dressed up as Dr. Nichols at STLV a couple of times. Okay, let's go. We're here. We're at the end. My number one pick. Five words and a hashtag. And I am surprised this episode has not been picked. So I'm glad I saved it for last because it's a big one. What does it mean anyway? # arrogant son of a... It is Jean-Luc returning home in the TNG season 4 episode Family. A staggeringly good, game-changing episode of Star Trek. I mean, it literally changed everything in terms of how they did their storytelling after this episode moving forward to connect. This episode is really part three of Best of Both Worlds. And you know, you could basically pick this whole episode. It's the only TNG episode with no scenes on the bridge. And a lot of it takes place on Earth with Jean-Luc in Le Barre, France, going home to visit his brother Robert and his family and his uncle Rene as nephew Jean-Luc is walking up to his house. And that's the scene I picked. I love this moment. And I'm going to have another Picard connection here in a second. But I love this moment where he's walking up to his house and he's accosted by his robber nephew that he calls Uncle Rene. And it's just really, really emotional and says a lot about the Picard character. And then now, 25 years later, after Nepenthe was released, I think this scene is even better with the amazing parallel between the opening of Nepenthe with Jean-Luc walking up to Riker and Troy's house and running into Kestra and their conversation and their kind of banter that they open with, and just a lot of powerful parallels setting up the levels of healing that Picard needed on these two visits. So he's ironically escaping the Borg both times. And one time he's going home to see his family. And the second time he's reaching out to his other family, Riker and Troy, really is in both episodes as he's looking for what's next for him. So I love family, all time great episode of TNG. Anybody have a take on Picard going home in family?
I almost picked this episode as well, but I'm terrible with episode titles. So the note I wrote for myself was the episode where Picard gets sad in the wine mud.
yeah, right.
But it's a really good character episode. And it was nice to see kind of that callback in Picard in the new show. It was a nice bookend.
As someone with a brother, I really relate to how family knows how to push your buttons. They know exactly what to say, and they do Picard's brother does a complete workup on him, and he's absolutely right. And I love that. It's just only family can do that.
Well said.
I mean, this episode for me was, I think, a real surprise at the time, because it was, you know, this episode to take a breath. This episode to psychologically recover from the events of the previous, you know, spectacular two-part. And I just remember thinking, like, TV doesn't do this, does it? You know, like, which one of the family members is possessed by a non-corporeal alien being? Or like, when's the plot going to kick in? And it doesn't. And that's so great. And it was so refreshing and surprising to me that they were really giving, like, an episode for Picard to just be himself and exist in a different context and heal, and like quietly profound, really. And that's really what I guess you're saying, Jim. So it's a great episode and a great pick. Yeah.
Yeah. It really changed the way you could tell Star Trek stories.
This very nearly made my list. It was my sixth choice because family is quite similar to the Enterprise episode that I picked home.
Yep.
It's that you've had the high drama, you've had the high back recovering. I was actually going to pick the final scenes with Renee looking up at the stars. Mm. My five words were dreaming about starships and adventure, hashtag let him dream.
Amazing. And I'll tell you, since you said that, I've seen this episode 100 times. I watched it again yesterday. And yeah, I was crying again. When they fight in the mud, it's just absolutely Patrick Stewart at his best in Trek. Absolutely incredible. Okay, we have made it all the way through 25 scenes on Earth. Fantastic. Got a lot of good stats to go through, but first let's get some secondary systems picks. Jen, you got anything you want to rattle off quick?
Let's see what you can do with the secondary systems.
Yeah, the ones that most of them have been mentioned, but some of the ones I considered was Time's Arrow Part 1. The cold open with Data's head in the cave. First flight from Enterprise. There's a couple I wanted to, but because they were not real Earth, I couldn't pick them. But the scenes, our man Bashir.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And I just love that episode. And Voyager in the Flesh.
I love it. Since you mentioned two of them, that my toughest cut was first flight. I really love the scene where they steal the NX Beta and Trip, basically Trip and Archer stealing the ship. It's just so good. And I had Time Zero, but I had this scene where Mark Twain is eavesdropping on Data and Gunn, and it just always stood out to me. Eavesdropping is by no means a proper activity for a gentleman. Nonetheless, the deed is done. Love that moment. Dana, how about you? Any secondary systems picks?
I did mention a few of them before, but some of the ones that I didn't mention were in Star Trek 09, the conversation between Pike and Kirk in the bar when Kirk has, you know, tissues up his nose after getting his ass yep. handed to him.
Yep.
And the whole I dare you to do better thing is I think that's a really good scene. And that I think Kelvin Universe Pike is really awesome.
Fantastic. Daniel, how about you?
I think everything's been mentioned. Hello Computer was at the top of my list. Any scene from Little Green Men. Your scene of future Data with all the cats from All Good Things. I really wanted to talk about the Enterprise episode Home, either Archer and Hernandez having their heart to heart on the mountain, or Phlox's head inflating like a pufferfish, which is another moment that I really enjoyed and found really amusing when I first saw it. So yeah, but pretty much you guys hit every beat that I could have possibly mentioned.
It's funny. I had Home on my list too, and I kept thinking, oh, I love that scene with where Trip has to watch to pull Mary Koss. And I'm like, wait a second, that was on Vulcan. That's not on Earth. I can't pick that. How about you, Larian? What else you got?
Well, I had the first duty in Picard's the first duty's the truth speech.
Brilliant.
I also had a Voyager's 1159. So mostly because my dad's actually currently writing a memoir for his father. And it's that whole, you know, how we misremember the past and how we don't actually know that much about our family. We think we do.
Interesting.
Yeah, we're doing a bit of that at the moment. So that resonated for me. And also had Assignment Earth, which I saw recently. And I just wanted to give a shout out, not so much to the scenes on Earth, but to the scenes above Earth, because the remastering of the Enterprise above the Earth is just so beautiful. It's just so lovely to see the Enterprise in orbit above a HD Earth. It's so beautiful. They did a great job.
Yeah, I love the Enterprise coming out of the clouds is for sure one of the most beautiful things they did with the remastering. It was, I loved it in the original too. It looks just a really stark, amazing a visual. And I can't believe, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's the only episode with Earth in the title.
Yeah.
780 plus episodes of Star Trek. So Assignment Earth gets a shout out.
Jim, it also has a crazy cat in it, making lots of amazing crazy cat sounds that I'm pretty sure is a woman just making meow, meow sounds. But
That's right. It's Isis the cat. Fantastic. We have lots of cats in this episode too, so that's very fitting. I think most of mine have been mentioned here. I had Voyage Home, Time Zero, Into Darkness, Home, Little Green Men, First Contact. I had Cosimo from Non Sequitur, Carbon Creek was going to be my special shout out. The only episode on my list, and it was going to be my number six kind of backup pick, and I can't believe it hasn't been mentioned yet, is of course the amazing Past Tense. When Ben Sisko assumes the identity of Gabriel Bell, one of my all-time favorite episode of Star Trek. I'm prepared to say that now, today, in episode 93, and I love Past Tense. Okay, incredible, everyone. Amazing job. I love all these picks. I can't believe how deep we got. I got some great stats coming up, but let's get into our regeneration cycle.
Computer, activate regeneration cycle. Alcoves beta and gamma.
Okay, we're going to rattle off everyone's picks really quick here and go through them, all five of us, as my cats continue to fight. Jen, how about you? What are your five picks?
Okay, so my number five pick was Enterprise Season 4, Episode 3, Home. My number four was Star Trek 09. Number three was another Enterprise episode, Season 2, Episode 23, Regeneration. Number two was DS9 from Season 4, Paradise Lost. And my number one pick was from Picard. Second episode, Maps and Legends.
Very cool. You had two from Enterprise and one each from Deep Space Nine, Picard, and the Kelvin timeline. Dana, how about you?
My number five was from Carbon Creek in Enterprise. My number four was Deep Space Nine, Roswell. Number three was the book Traitor Wins by L.A. Graff, which is an original series book. Number two was from Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. And my number one pick was from Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Incredible. So three TOS representative picks and Enterprise and Deep Space Nine. Daniel, how about you?
My first pick was Maps and Legends from Picard, Season 1. I then went for The Visitor from Deep Space Nine, Season 4. Then Lineage from Voyager, Season 7. These are the Voyages from Enterprise, Season 4, and then finally Star Trek Into Darkness.
All right, so you spread it around. Like you said, you had five each from Kelvin Timeline, Enterprise, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, and Picard. And Larian, how about you on your five picks?
So my number five pick was from Voyager's Non Sequitur. My number four pick was from Deep Space Nine's Little Green Men. My number three pick was from The Next Generation's All Good Things Part 2. My number two pick was from First Contact. And my number one pick was from Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Two TNG and then TOS, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager represented. And my top five were TOS, The Wrath of Khan, and Kirk celebrating his birthday. Number four pick, The City on the Edge of Forever, TOS, and The Death of Edith Keeler. My number three pick, The Enterprise Broken Bow, and basically the introduction of everything at the beginning of that series. My number two pick, All Good Things from TNG and Data and Picard and Jessel at Cambridge. And my number one pick, TNG, Family, Picard returning home to Labar, France. So I had two from TNG, two from TOS, and one from Enterprise. Okay, so to break down the stats here, first off, duplicates. We had one duplicate from Little Green Man, and there were three other episodes that were duplicate picks, but not the same scene. And then I broke it down basically on your Prime Directive, Jen, the three different categories of kind of alternate time travel versus just a straight pick versus a holodeck or kind of a simulation. And we had 14 picks actually happened on Earth. 11 were alternate kind of time travel. I'm counting the Kelvin timeline as straight picks, people, not alternate. And there was not one single pick with a simulation or a holograph. So I think that's interesting. I would have thought maybe like Vic or Moriarty or something would have got a shout out. And then to break it down by series, there were no Discovery or Lower Decks or Star Trek Shorts picks, but everybody else was represented. We had two from the Kelvin timeline, two from Picard, and two from Voyager. We had four each from Deep Space Nine and TNG. And Enterprise had five picks, so that's interesting. And then TOS leads the way with six picks. And overall, out of our 25 picks, there were seven movie selections, which I thought might be the case. Lots of movies taking place on Earth. Okay, we are done. That was fantastic. I love how so many deep cut picks, but as always, we've now entered a temporal causality loop. So before we can depart, it's time to hear from you.
The Enterprise has been caught up in a temporal causality loop, and I suspect that something similar may have happened to you.
And for this week's temporal causality loop, we're going back to episode 88 and our abstract H topic. And for that, we got in a great voicemail from Chris Powers, who is on Twitter at CDPow325. And here is his list, complete with five words and a hashtag, for his abstract H picks.
Hello, Trek Ranks. This is Chris Powers on Twitter at CDPow325. And here is an all TNG list of my top five abstract H episodes. So for my number five pick, five words, fight does not go well. Hashtag never forget Wolf359. It's Admiral Hansen, H for Hansen from the best of both worlds. Number four pick, five words, I will not assist you, hashtag third of five. It's Hugh from the episode I, Borg. My number three pick, five words, Gough is best served live, hashtag when not to duck. My pick is Klingon honor, H for honor, from the episode A Matter of Honor. Number two pick, five words, nice to meet you, Pinocchio, hashtag pop goes the weasel. My pick is the holodeck in the episode Encounter at Farpoint. And for my number one pick for a top five abstract H episode, five words, you're outmanned, outgunned, and out-equipped. Hashtag that is life. It's the USS Hathaway from season 2, episode 21, Peak Performance. So those are my top five abstract H episodes from The Next Generation. Thanks, Jim, for all you do on Trek Ranks. I love your podcast, and I hope you all live long and prosper.
I love that all TNG list from Chris, especially his number one pick, which almost made my list, and I think I mentioned it in the secondary systems on the show. And for sure I had it in the album art on that episode. It's the amazing USS Hathaway from Peak Performance. So awesome, awesome stuff from Chris. Definitely good enough to clear ourselves from this week's temporal causality loop. So as always, I want to thank everyone again for all your great responses to the Trek Ranks podcast. So keep your list coming to me at Trek Ranks on Twitter so we can retweet them. But we also want to hear from you. So put together your own list of top five scenes on Earth or a list from any of our past shows and give us a call at the Tricorder Transmissions at 609-512-5527. Or you can just DM me your picks if you want to record something, and we can do it that way. So hopefully we'll hear from you so you can be featured on the next episode of Trek Ranks. And on the next episode of Trek Ranks, we are doing another major topic. It's one we've joked about and talked about for a while. We're finally doing our top five cold opens. We actually got a cold open shout out. Somebody mentioned it in this episode. It's that opening narrative teaser before the credits roll, the scene that kind of sets up the episode. So this is kind of a tough one to put you guys on the spot for, but I'm going to do it anyways. So anyone have a thought on a top five cold open off the top of their head that they want to relay?
I definitely have one.
Okay.
It's the shortest cold open, and of course it's from Impulse with T'Pol.
Yes. Definitely in the consideration. Impulse from Enterprise is on record as the shortest ever cold open with T'Pol freaking out. Anyone else have one?
I'd have to say, this is quite well timed, but Second Contact from Lower Decks.
It was so good. The
first moment of howling laughter from me was the bat left just slicing so deeply into Boimer's leg. That's a great topic to come along when we have some Lower Decks to talk about. So.
And Lower Decks is doing something really special with their cold open. So the other one too with the transdimensional alien is so funny. Okay, well then that we got two. So Jen and Lyrian, what do you guys got?
One of my secondary systems for this was Time's Arrow with historical heads hidden in holes. Data's lost his head in the cave.
Perfect. Yep, I knew it had got referenced. That was it. Data's head in the cave is a great great cold open. Lyrian, how about you?
Well, my brain just goes to The Defiant, where the moment in the, I think it's the cold open, where you see Riker's face just standing there out of the blue, you know, Kira's having a bad day, and then there's just his smiling face, and I just love that open. So unexpected.
That is awesome.
That's a really good choice.
Fantastic deep cut pick. So good. Well, we are ready to wrap it up. So a huge thanks to our worldwide panel for tonight's awesome episode. We have Jen House in England, Dana Kennedy in Canada, Daniel Martin in South Korea, and Lyrian McGregor in Australia. It's great to have all of you on the show. Anybody want to say goodbye or have any Trek subspace communications you want to relay before we depart?
Just thank you for having me. It's been great.
Fantastic to have you on, finally.
Yeah, thank you. And I say well done to everybody who's recording in weird and wonderful time zones. Because as I said at the beginning, I've had it quite easy, really, compared with some of you.
Yeah, me too. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, thank you, Jim. We all appreciate it.
Perfect. Really appreciate it, guys. So, Jen, you are going to have lunch, and I'm going to go have breakfast. And I think Dana...
I'm going to have coffee.
There you go. And Lyrian and Daniel are going to bed.
Going to bed.
So, perfect. All right. Thanks, everyone, again, for engaging with us here on episode 93 of the Trek Ranks podcast. As always, I want to close by saying I'm looking forward to standing with you again here in this place where I belong.
Oh, good Lord. A highwayman.
A what?
Highwayman. It's a robber who attacks travelers, but none have been reported in this vicinity for centuries.
But I'm not a robber.
Oh. I'm much relieved, sir.
I know who you are.
Then you have the advantage.
You're my nephew, Jean-Luc, from the Starship Enterprise.
Then you must be my Uncle René.
I'm not your uncle. It's the other way around.
Too bad. I rather enjoyed the idea.
Why have you been away so long?
Well, Starfleet keeps me very busy.
Father says you don't like it here.
I'm sure you misunderstood.
No, I didn't. He said so.
Well, Robert and I, we... Perhaps it's time to change all that.
You know, you don't seem so arrow... Arrow... You know.
Arrogant?
Yes, arrogant. You don't seem that way to me. What does it mean anyway? Arrogant son of a...
Let's talk about that later, shall we?
Mummy? He's here!
Just want to remind everyone again that the entire Trek Ranks catalog is available for you to download and listen to at TrekRanks.com and on your podcast player of choice. Our episodes never get carbon dated, so check out the topics you've missed and maybe just want to listen to again over at TrekRanks.com. And a reminder to check out our friends 5-Year Mission at 5YearMission.net. They're writing a song for every episode of Star Trek, and you won't believe how great their music is. They also have a podcast at the Trek Geeks Network, so seek them out. You won't regret it.
Clark Gable movie at the Orpheum.
What?
I'd love to see it. You know, Dr. McCoy said the same thing.
McCoy? Leonard McCoy?
Yes. He's in the mission. He's...
Stay right here. Spock! Stay right there. What is it? McCoy, he's a... Spock! No, Jim!
Saved her. Do you know what you just did?
He knows, Doctor. He knows.